Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
She was shaking in pure fear. Her son Aaron, he said, look, if Mum dies, I don't think I'm going to be able to handle that.
Welcome to Crimes NZ with me, Jesse Mulligan. In 1984, Lorraine Cohen and her son Aaron were arrested at Penang International Airport and charged with drug trafficking. In Malaysia, a conviction for trafficking usually means the death penalty. Journalist Tim Donohue spent a lot of his career covering the Cohens' incarceration, and he wrote a book about the pair. It was called The Tiger Who Smiled.
I don't think there was too much sympathy for Lorraine because she was a person who was seen to lead her son of 18 years and 4 months astray when she boarded Singapore Airlines Flight 22 from Sydney to Singapore late in 1984. Lorraine, by that stage, she was a seasoned criminal. In Australia, by late 1982, she'd had 38 convictions for prostitution, stealing and various heroin offences. And this information was contained in the Stewart Royal Commission report, which went on to record how Lorraine was a close associate of Terry Clark and his former wife, Norma Fleet.
So she was a drug addict from a very early age.
She was indeed. When the mother and son arrived in Penang, they checked into a hotel called the New China Hotel, which was roughly about 300 metres away from a man who would play a huge part in her life, her future lawyer, Kapil Singh. But in the 2 months that they spent in that New China Hotel in Lee Street, Lorraine in particular was just incredibly foolish, given the fact that possession of 15 grams of heroin automatically labelled one as a trafficker and was punishable by death. They were shooting up heroin, which was extremely cheap in comparison to the heroin that they were able to purchase in Sydney. In Sydney, they were paying about $300 an ounce. In Penang, they were paying roughly about $6 New Zealand an ounce for their heroin. So it was a junkie's paradise, but they were foolish because the desk clerk at the New China Hotel was a gentleman by the name of Marimutu, and he turned out to be one of the star prosecution witnesses in the High Court trial, which began in July 1987. And his evidence was quite damning that these people were openly shooting up. Lorraine, she was convicted for trafficking in more than 34 grams of heroin, and that constituted an automatic death sentence. Aaron Cohen's decision, he had roughly 18 grams of heroin on him. He was not deemed to be a trafficker, and in a Malaysian precedent, even though he had more than 15 grams of heroin, he was regarded as possessing the drug for his own use. So between the two of them, well, it was Aaron who basically created the precedent, and when they got to the Supreme Court on appeal, Lorraine, she benefited from the precedent that had been set by her son.
Yeah. I mean, to give you an indication how sad the story is, she ended up in Malaysia because her mother left her an inheritance of $10,000 and she decided to go to Malaysia and spend it on drugs.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court hearing, which finally exonerated them in, I think it was second half of 1989, it also heard evidence that another reason why she decided to take her son to Malaysia was that she had received a severe beating from her then de facto husband, Don. So all in all, they were very definitely an accident waiting to happen. You know, when they crossed the causeway back in late 1984, it was more or less inevitable that they would be arrested as they attempted to leave Penang to return to Australia in February of 1985.
When they were arrested, did they become high-profile prisoners in the Malaysian media?
Yeah, they most certainly did. They became high-profile prisoners, Jesse, right across the Commonwealth, really, because in his early days in Penang Jail, when he was awaiting his High Court trial, Aaron Cohen shared a cell with Kevin Barlow. And Kevin Barlow and Jeffrey Chambers, they were executed in Pudu Prison in Kuala Lumpur in July 1986. So Aaron, at a very early age, learnt just what a terrifying situation he was in from Kevin Barlow, who paid the ultimate price. But Kevin Barlow also was a client of Kapil Singh, and it was, I think, because of Kapil Singh's staunch defence of Kevin Barlow that Lorraine Cohen, she decided to enlist the help of Kapil Singh as the lawyer.
So was there some sort of doubt about choosing him as their lawyer, Kapil Singh, because I think he was in jail at the time?
Yeah, this is one of the great ironies of the whole thing, actually. Kapil Singh was both a Penang State Assemblyman and a member of the Democratic Action Party, which is an opposition, essentially Chinese party. And Kapil, he ended up chairing the Democratic Action Party, which was a huge personal tribute to him because he was a Sikh, and most of the members of the DAP were in fact Chinese. But Kapil was a very active lawyer for the DAP, and he had two cases on the go at the time, which made him extremely unpopular with the Dr. Mahathir-led United Malay National Organisation government. And one of these cases involved the United Malay National Organisation, headed up by Dr. Mahathir, awarding a very, very lucrative highway project from Alor Star all the way down to Johor Bahru to a company by the name of United Engineers Malaysia. And this company was in effect, a subsidiary of the ruling UMNO party. And Kapil, acting on behalf of Lim Kit Siang, his DAP leader, he staunchly went after Mahathir, alleging corruption in the awarding of this contract. There was also another issue which saw Kapil Singh get himself offside with the authorities, and that was between 1983 and 1986, the Sultan of Selangor, which is a small state just outside of Kuala Lumpur, the Sultan publicly made a statement that no drug trafficker would be exonerated by the Selangor Pardons Board, of whom the Sultan of Selangor chaired that particular body. So Kapil went after him on both those fronts, and somewhat unwittingly for Lorraine and Aaron Cohen, they became caught up in the politics of this. It was a massive scrap involving opposition political parties and UMNO in Malaysia. They became caught up in it when Kapil was, he was rounded up, I think, in October 1987 under Malaysia's Internal Security Act. Mahathir, under the Internal Security Act, anyone who sort of upset him could be jailed for as long as the Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Mahathir, considered to be fit.
Yeah, shocker.
So Kapil, he found himself in jail for about 14 months, but he did manage to keep an eye on the welfare of a number of his clients, who a number of them were on death row. He just instilled total confidence in his clients, and I saw that firsthand on two or three occasions when I visited him when he was incarcerated in the Kamunting detention camp. And on one particular day when I was there, he handed me a note directed to Lorraine and Aaron Cohen. He said, "Fear not," he said, "I'm here to represent you, and there's absolutely no reason why I shouldn't be able to represent you." And he was able to instill such confidence in the Cohens that they really made a very, very courageous decision to retain him as their counsel. Kapil Singh was quite an amazing man in that regard, really.
And he did represent the Coens from prison. And one of the things he did was organise for some people to come from New Zealand, including, or maybe it was from Sydney, an Auckland doctor called Fraser McDonald. Why was he called to give some medical evidence?
Yeah, Fraser, there was the Howard League for Penal Reform in New Zealand, which was in those days headed up by Peter Aldridge Williams QC, who was also incidentally the lawyer for Terry Clark whenever he got himself into trouble in Australia and New Zealand. He headed up this Howard League for Penal Reform, and there were two lawyers in particular, Peter Williams and a guy called David Hagar. They travelled to Penang early in 1986-87, prior to the High Court trial, and they were there to organise the defence, the Coens' defence, which was essentially that both Lorraine and Aaron, they were hopeless drug addicts, and consequently the heroin that was found on them as they were attempting to go through Penang Airport in February 1985 was for their own use rather than trafficking. So Peter Williams and David Hagar, they enlisted the defence support of people like Dr. Stella Dalton from Sydney, who had treated Lorraine Coen for a number of years for her addiction problems, and Fraser McDonald, who had worked with a young Aaron Coen in New Zealand.
So how did Lorraine and Aaron do in prison while they're waiting for this trial to take place? What were the conditions like for them?
Well, I was in a rather fortunate position. I was at the time working as the New Zealand Press Association's Asian correspondent based out of Hong Kong. And I suppose during the 4 or 5 years that the Coens were incarcerated, I'd get on a plane from Kai Tak and jump a Cathay Pacific flight down to Penang sort of 4 or 5 times a year just to check on them. And because I was sort of regarded as the New Zealand journalist on the ground, Kapil Singh went out of his way to get me in to see these people during their incarceration. And from what I could see, Lorraine fared reasonably well. She went cold turkey in Penang Jail, and she was off the drugs for the duration of her sentence. Aaron, he didn't fare so well. He still had a major addiction problem inside the prison, which a lot of us journalists visiting from overseas found to be a totally ironic situation, because the very same people who were leading these people to the gallows in Kajang Prison down there just south of Kuala Lumpur, these people were also making a bit of money on the side by making sure anyone who wanted a bit of dope in the prison in those days, they could get it. Don't ask me how they paid for it, but Aaron, off and on over the years, he certainly did manage to continue on with his addiction.
So what happened at that first trial? What was the verdict?
Well, there was two separate verdicts there, Jesse. There was the verdict against Lorraine Coen, which was one of trafficking, and she was, in no uncertain terms, sentenced to death by the man in Malaysia who was known as the hanging judge. He was Mr. Justice Desiden Abdullah. So Lorraine was sentenced to death. But Aaron, as I said earlier, created this precedent in terms of Malaysian law. He was the first person to be charged with a trafficking charge in Malaysia, but to have the charge reduced to one of possession, which meant that at the end of the High Court trial, Aaron was sentenced to 20 years in jail plus a six-stroke routine whipping with the rotan.
So pretty tough, obviously. What happens then? A decision to appeal?
Yeah, the decision to appeal for Kapil, and I spoke to him at some length about this, was not an easy one, because here he had the boy, Aaron Coen, who effectively had beaten the noose in terms of the High Court decision. And by deciding to appeal that decision and to try and reduce the jail sentence, say, from 20 to 10 years under the appeal, and to also get rid of the whipping, he also opened up the opportunity for the prosecution to come back and seek the death penalty against Aaron Coen, which is what indeed happened. So for the next 2 years prior to the the appeal court hearing in Kuala Lumpur, both mother and son, they lived very much under the threat of death in Penang jail. Of course, things came to a head in 1989 for the Supreme Court hearing. And once again, I was, as a journalist, just remarkably fortunate that I'd built up this relationship with Kapil Singh. And I think the thing that I remember most from those days was when one Sunday afternoon prior to the appeal beginning, Kapil Singh, Peter Williams, David Hagar and myself, we drove the 20 kilometres from downtown Kuala Lumpur to Kajang Jail, where the Coens had been moved from Penang prior to the appeal. And as a journalist, you know, in New Zealand, it's virtually impossible to get anywhere near inside these jails, but I just walked in behind Kapil Singh, and first of all, we went to Erin in the male section of the jail, and then the decision was made that Erin would be transported to the women's section, and we would be able to chat to the two of them together in the same room in the women's section. And that was an experience that I will never forget, really, Jesse, because there we all were, and these two people were going to find out the following day whether they were going to live or die. Lorraine, as she always did, she was far better equipped to handle the absolute toughness of the situation she was in, and she cracked hardy and she was telling all sorts of jokes, but I couldn't help but notice when she stood up, like, she was shaking. Mm-hmm. She was shaking in pure fear. And her son, Aaron, he told me, and this was a story which went worldwide, he said, look, if Mum dies, I don't think I'm going to be able to handle that. And so it was a very, very poignant time. And for all the wrong reasons, it was one of the best stories that I did manage to crack.
And so the five Supreme Court judges considered the evidence and made a call, came down with their verdict, and this is how New Zealanders heard about it in August 1989.
Good morning, New Zealand. Jeff Robinson and Maggie Barry here with Morning Report on Thursday the 10th of August. In the programme today, Lorraine Cohen is saved from the gallows.
Good morning. A New Zealander who spent more than 4 years under threat of death, Lorraine Cohen, will wake up in a Malaysian jail this morning knowing that she will live and will be free in 9 years or less. In a surprise decision last night, the Malaysian Supreme Court gave her the benefit of the doubt on whether she was a heroin trafficker or simply an addict and changed the death penalty to one of life imprisonment. Her son, Aaron Cohen, has had his life sentence and six strokes of the cane confirmed, though the prosecution wanted him to hang. And the Cohen's lawyer, Kapil Singh, says he now intends to try to win a reduction in their sentences and save Aaron from the caning, which is very severe physical punishment, on health grounds. Lorraine Cohen says she did not expect the verdict and thanks Mr. Singh, whom she describes as brilliant. She says she will now write a book called The Woman with the Golden Arm, a reference to the fact that it was the needle marks on her arm which convinced the judges that she'd had the heroin for her own use, not for sale, and so saved her life. Meanwhile, she says, it's not too bad in prison.
I'm not happy, but I'm relieved. I'll be an old lady when I come out.
That's Lorraine Cohen, and we've got also the reaction of the lawyer Kapil Singh here.
I'm happy, certainly. I'm happy for them because they will live, and I think that is is of paramount consideration.
So Aaron still faced that whipping, and that actually ended up happening, although they had been trying to bring that sentence down to him.
Yeah, he sure did, Jesse. Actually, at the conclusion of that trial, or should I say at the conclusion of the appeal, Lorraine and Aaron Cohen, they were seated in the dock, roughly about a metre away from myself. And during that hearing, I became very much aware that Aaron, he still did have a problem, and mainly because he remarkably slept through most of those proceedings. And when the court actually told him that he was going to live and that the death penalty that the prosecution was seeking had been ruled out, he had absolutely no idea, really, what the decision was. And he sort of turned to me and he said, well, what's happening? And I explained to him that he was going to live and that he would have to spend 20 years in a Malaysian jail and that he was going to be on the receiving end of a six-stroke whipping from the rotan. He was not at all happy because living for him meant continuing to live in this hellhole, which was Penang Jail. And so even though his mother had got off because of the precedent that he had set in the High Court, you could say that Aaron was not a happy chappy.
And I shudder to ask, but how horrific was the caning?
Yeah, well, that was something that I never really got to speak to Aaron about. What used to happen when they were back in Penang, the addicts, none of them really had any idea when the caning was going to take place. So the ideal situation was for the addicts was that they were completely stoned out of their brains when they were whipped. I'm not sure whether Aaron was able to get himself affixed to a system in that way, but for most of them, it meant that they couldn't lie on their backs for 6 weeks or so. And everybody in Penang Jail knew basically when people were being strung up to the A-frame and flogged. Another great irony was that the whole proceeding was watched over by a doctor and they were treated with iodine. Yeah, pretty horrific stuff, really, but that's just the way it is, you know? That's the way it was over there.
So when did they finally get out of prison?
Yeah, off the top of my head, I think it was about 1996. Kapal, he made numerous attempts seeking from Mahathir and his government to pardon them so that they could return to New Zealand. With good behaviour, they were scheduled to serve 13 years, but as it turned out, they served just 11 years.
I just want to make sure we get to this final cut, Tim. So here's the late Sir Peter Williams, QC, commenting on Morning Report about the release of the Coens.
It did come as a surprise, but a very agreeable surprise, and I know it'll come as a surprise to the Coens themselves because they did not expect to be released until June 1998. So I'm sure they'll be thrilled by this news. Lorraine has suffered illnesses. She's had surgery. She's lost her teeth. The boy I know, he's been through all sorts of difficulties in adjusting to the prison environment. They've both shown grit and determination and courage. No one, of course, condones their offending. I mean, that is obnoxious to all New Zealanders, but that's a long way in the past now.
Lorraine, ironically, she returned to New Zealand, and the great irony there was is that she outlived Kapil Singh, her lawyer, by a month or two. I think they both died, it was around 2013, 2014. But the woman who spent 5 or 6 years sort of expecting to hang in Malaysia, she outlived her lawyer.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Crimes NZ with me, Jesse Mulligan. The Coens story is one that gripped the nation, but it was far from over when they arrived home to New Zealand. Both Lorraine and Aaron struggled to stay clean, and by 2001, mother and son were back behind bars, both sentenced to 4 years jail time on drug-related charges. Lorraine was 71 when she died of cancer in 2014. She survived by Aaron and another son. You can find more episodes of Crimes NZ on the RNZ Podcasts page. It's also on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you catch your favourite podcasts. Follow the series, and if you enjoyed it, give it a rating to help others find it too. And when you've finished binging this, you might enjoy Red Line. It's a four-part podcast about China's growing influence in New Zealand.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.